try, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome into the Rocky Top Insider Press Pass podcast. My name is Rick Butler. Joined with me across the table virtually, although we have spent plenty of time together over the last 10 days or so, my good friend, your good friend, the one and only Ryan Shumpert. Ryan, good morning. I guess it's right here on the precipice of afternoon. We're sitting here recording about noon here on, what is today, Tuesday. All the days get jumbled up when you're spending time on the road or in different cities. But how are you doing? You and I got back from Detroit yesterday, had a pit stop in Florence, Kentucky along the way. How about you? How are you? Are you nice and settled back in? What's going on?
Yeah, starting to get settled. Still some more settling to do today and the rest of this week. And shout out Tony Vitello, no midweek game this week. So that's nice not having to get over to Lindsey Nelson Stadium this week. But no, it's March is chaotic, and it's such an adrenaline rush and really a high because it's just one thing onto the other, like game, boom, prepare for next game, recap. And then when Tennessee wins those two games, it's back home for 48 hours, laundry, pack, get ready to leave again, figure out all your
hotels, rental cars.
Yeah, I mean, it's truly, once you get really to the SEC tournament, it is an absolute adrenaline rush the rest of the way. So we'll get into all of it, but such an awesome, fun season and a fun March Madness. And now ready for things to slow down a little bit, though, you know, nothing really ever truly slows down too much. We'll have plenty of Tennessee spring football stuff and Tennessee baseball content moving forward.
Yeah, you know, November and March, sort of the real two big crossover months for us. Obviously, football and basketball in November, basketball, baseball, and football. And when it comes to March, when you have spring football rolled in, but I like this crossover time better just because you're right. Like sometimes when you just travel once per every couple weeks or something like that, that kind of gets annoying. But when you are sort of getting those gears turning, you're boom, boom, boom onto the next place. I like that. And obviously the tournament is a very fun place to be. Now, I think I'm probably close to your number. I think I'm probably a few back because you spent a couple extra days in Nashville than I did. But you said, I think either maybe it was on social media or a text or something like that, you only slept in your own bed like 15 days out of the 31 days in March. Is that right?
Yeah, 16 of 31.
Wow.
And I had, yeah, an Alabama trip too, right at the start of the month. I went.
That's right, know, yeah.
A day early too because I have family down in Birmingham and stayed with them. So, yeah, a couple extra days in Birmingham, maybe an extra day in Birmingham, a couple extra days, like you said, in Nashville around the SEC tournament, spending time with my family. So a little bit, but it is crazy. And your crossover statement was said like a man that's not at Lindsey Nelson Stadium through February because I'm the complete opposite.
That's true.
I'm the complete opposite because when November crossover season, you got one football game a week, one, maybe two basketball games a week. And the February, March crossover season, they're playing four baseball games a week, two basketball games a week. Though it does get a little different once the actual tournament starts because then, you know, I'm trying to get to the midweek games, but Jack's holding down all the weekend stuff. So you're right. It is kind of different when you actually get to the NCAA tournament. Just go on a roll, like you were saying.
I don't want to necessarily out myself here, expose myself here, but you're right. Right. I don't necessarily cover baseball like you two do, like you and Jack. My primary two sports are mainly basketball and football. So there is kind of this spot during crossover where, yes, there's football and basketball happening at the same time. Because you're, you know, 1,000 miles north up in Detroit, you can't necessarily do all the football. So even though both is going on at the same time, there are stretches where you can only do one. So that is kind of the nice part about that. It's not necessarily, you know, you go to football for 5 hours in the morning, then you got to turn around 3 hours later and go to a 4-hour baseball game right there in the middle of the week. So not to necessarily out myself there, but that is what I can sink my teeth into.
Yeah, and I mean, it goes the other way too. For football season, once basketball starts, you're handling more football stuff than I am. So it goes both directions. Like obviously you were in Columbia. I didn't go to that game, that football game. So it goes both ways. But yeah, it's hectic from the time baseball season starts in mid-February and until it's over. And obviously everything in the basketball calendar was kind of pushed back a week this year, just with the way everything fell. And then you combine that with, you know, tied for the deepest run Tennessee's ever had in the NCAA tournament. It made it a long crossover season this year for sure.
Yeah. Well, you know, obviously we're going to get into our basketball sort of season recap, tournament recap here in a second, but what you did just remind me of that. And It's never a bad time to throw it out there, but we do a ton throughout the year. We cover all the football games, all the basketball games, all the baseball games. It is nonstop, and we've hit a couple of really nice mile markers in the last year, in the last 365 days or so, whether it be on social media, whether it be on our website, whether it be on podcast numbers, YouTube numbers, whatever it is. We've reached a ton of milestones over the last 12 months. So just a big thank you to everybody who is continuing to read and listen throughout the year. Obviously, things are now starting to wind down. Baseball is its own entity and its own sort of chaos in itself. But as far as basketball and football are concerned, the two big juggernauts are sort of winding down. More will come. But, you know, with that in the rearview mirror, just want to say a big thank you to everybody as summer quickly approaches here soon. But, of course, we got lots more baseball and we have at least about 25, 30 minutes more of basketball as we get into a season recap. Ryan, let's sort of start at the most recent and then work our way backwards. Obviously, the NCAA tournament happened. Tennessee has four games throughout. Let's see. Tennessee starts off with a win over 15 seed St. Peter's, 83-49. Tennessee then gets a second round victory over 7 seed Texas, 62-58. Then the Vols travel to the Motor City, a dominant performance in a narrow victory over 3 seed Creighton. It was a great game, 82-75, and then a loss to Purdue, 72-66 in the Elite Eight, the final game of the season for Tennessee. Just sort of what were your tournament thoughts as overall as a whole, and any kind of final thoughts as we're just a couple of days removed from this Purdue game?
Yeah, no, you're right. I think maybe something I hadn't thought about when you just read the scores out, it's kind of a reminder. We talked about all year, we felt like this Tennessee team could win in different ways and how that would bode well for them in March. And you saw that. They won a game against Texas where they scored 62 points and the offense was really struggling. They couldn't hit any shots from the perimeter, whatever the number was, 3-23 or 3-25.
Yeah, it was nasty. Range.
And you turn around the next game and Tennessee wins, scoring 82 points against one of the best offensive teams in the country in Creighton, the team that it ranks ninth nationally in KenPom adjusted offensive efficiency rating. So you saw that. And I think something that I've said many times now, I've written about, I talked about on our postgame video, you know, the breaks did not fall Tennessee's way in this NCAA tournament. And I think, you know, just putting that in specific terms, of the teams left in the Elite Eight, Tennessee was the third highest seeded. I think they were the third best. Like, to me, I would definitively put them in that third spot. I definitely think UConn and Purdue were better than them. Maybe not massive gap between Tennessee and Purdue. They lost to them twice by a combined 10 points this year, so obviously they weren't way better than them, but I do think better. And then I think Tennessee was definitively better than, you know, whoever you would put as that fourth team, Illinois or Alabama or Duke or North Carolina State. So, yeah, it was kind of a tough break for Tennessee where you get to the Elite Eight and you're one of the best teams left, but you had to play one of those two teams that were still better than you. And I think that's one of the things that, you know, stands out. I think in the future, as we get further away from the season, there'll be a lot of regret about Tennessee not making the Final Four with a player like Dalton Knecht. And I think like that's understandable, but I'll think more about how the bracket didn't fall their way and they weren't able, because if they played any of those other five teams in the Elite Eight, obviously, they could have lost at the NCAA tournament. There's not a huge gap between Tennessee and Purdue. There's not a huge gap between Tennessee and Alabama or Tennessee and Illinois or any of those teams. So they could have lost, but I think they would have beaten any of those teams. And I think that's something that both, if you're a Tennessee fan, you can take some comfort in or some solace in. You lost to a better team, and you know there was no shame in the way Tennessee went out. But at the same time, I do think there's probably a lot of frustration in that you were probably one of the best three teams remaining in tournament, but you just had to play one of the two teams that were better than you.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head, and I think that was really my biggest takeaway as well. You starting from the top of that win over St. Peter's, obviously Tennessee came out, they handled business, they did what they needed to, and that's obviously something that not everybody did. You saw Kentucky lose, and it was a tremendous performance from Jack Golke that people are going to be talking about for a while, but you can never take those wins for granted, and I think maybe this is something that you said after that first game. Hey, a drama-free win is never something to scoff at, right? Or is never something to take for granted. And Tennessee was able to do that in that first game. Then you move to the Texas game, and Tennessee had to win in the final 3 minutes, the final 2 minutes, the final minute of the game. That was a game where Tennessee was battle-tested in a game where they didn't necessarily shoot the ball well, especially from the perimeter. Texas was able to make a comeback there at the end, but Tennessee did what they needed to do to find out a gritty, ugly win. We talked about how ugly of a win it was after that. And then you go to that Creighton game, and I really thought that was a complete performance from Tennessee. I said dominant a minute ago. That might have not been the right word that had come to the top of my head just because it was a close score. But you saw a really complete game from Tennessee in that game where they found that huge run in the second half. I know it was eclipsed by maybe UConn the next day with like a 30-0 run, but that 18-0 run was something that the NCAA tournament hadn't really seen up to that point. That was a dominant spot for Tennessee in which they were able to build themselves a win, and that was a lot of what Tennessee basketball was doing well throughout the year, right? When they were able to run in transition, when they were able to turn defense into offense. So you lead all those things together. And I agree, man, Tennessee didn't, this wasn't a Tennessee choke, right? In the tournament, it wasn't what, you know, a lot of people's greatest fear was that the offense just was never going to show up and the defense was going to crumble as well. It wasn't that in the loss. It was that Tennessee ran into legitimately a career performance from Zach Edey. And you can get into the weeds of the officiating and everything else after that, but at the end of the day, it was a 40-point, 16-rebound performance from Zach Edey. He dominated Tennessee. Tennessee threw everything they could at him. Tennessee had a nice game plan, had nice moments throughout the game. But at the end of the day, you just ran into an absolute juggernaut of a brick wall. So I think for Tennessee, it's nothing to hang your hat on. It's a tournament that you can hold your head up high from. Obviously, just the second Elite Eight in program history. But yeah, Tennessee had to play a chalk record, and not every team has to do that. Obviously, Tennessee, unfortunate, have to, but you know, you ran into one of the top teams in the tournament and certainly one of the championship favorites at this point, although UConn, you know, sitting there a juggernaut in their own rights. But signs point to potentially a Purdue-UConn championship. So we'll see what happens after that. But I think, again, for the chalk record that Tennessee had to play throughout the tournament, nothing to hang their head down about.
No, no doubt. And yeah, I would be surprised if it's not UConn-Purdue in a championship game. That seems like by far the most likely outcome when I look at it. So you're right, you know, nothing that Tennessee should be ashamed of. It felt like, you know, the one thing I'd say were you to me, and this is a complaint about the NCAA tournament and also you know, a criticism I guess of Tennessee, I think the Mississippi State loss is what hurt you, and it's hard to say because, you know, the players and coaches talked about how the positives they took from that and what a wake-up call that was. So who knows, maybe Tennessee doesn't play well if they win that game. But if you did get a one seed and you get out in the West, you get a much better path than Tennessee would have had. It, obviously, when the bracket came out, I think we said it on our podcast that night when we were discussing things like, man, the West is really, really soft. And, you know, if Tennessee had gotten the one seed, you feel pretty good about them making a deep run. And then kind of on the NCAA tournament complaint side of it, it's like, I don't get how for basketball, this is the tournament that makes them the most money. It's basically the vast majority of NCAA's revenue stream at this point. Why are we still doing stuff like regional based for not the first round weekends, but the way they are? Like the fact that Tennessee was the number 5 overall seed, why were they not with North Carolina, the number four overall seed, the lowest one seed? The answer, because geography, they were in the West. Well, why does that matter? It doesn't matter. I'm sure Tennessee would have taken the 2-hour longer plane ride to LA to have a much more favorable path, and I'm sure the answer to the why is the money, because it costs the NCAA, who books all the travel in the tournament, more when they do it like that. But to me, with what a cash cow this tournament is, and it's the fact that it's 2024, like, that's something that I think should be changed. And it's different when baseball, where you're not making as much money and the budgets for the teams are different. Like, I get it. I get how they do it in baseball, and it sometimes kind of can screw some teams. Like, almost, you know, really it screwed Clemson last year that they had Tennessee come. They were the number, whatever it was, the number 3 overall, number 4 overall seed, and they had one of the very best 2 seeds in the tournament have to come there in Tennessee. I get it some with baseball, but basketball, as much money as this tournament makes, I guess I understand it because of the money, but I think it's a really bad excuse to do it the way they do.
Yeah, no, we are all fantasy football junkies around here, right? We know how fantasy football draft works, right? We know how the snake draft format, and I think that there were people who were maybe thinking that's what it potentially was, or you know, that's at least what they reasonably thought it might be. But you're right, it's all geography based. Once you get to those 2 seeds, and it does kind of lean into the fact that, you know, there's going to be debates about it for those teams that are right there on the fringe. But no, you don't want to be the top 2 seed over the final 1 seed. You want to be that final 1 seed because, again, you get the most favorable path to the tournament over the 2 seed. So I think that you bring up a great point there, and that's something to note. And I also think, just on, while we're sort of airing our grievances on the NCAA tournament, you know, as a whole, as adults in the room, you know, for as great as this tournament is and as popular as this tournament is, there are, you know, you get to the underbelly of the tournament and there are some you know, gross things about it. The fact that Tennessee tipped off at 10:09 p.m. Eastern time, you know, 10:09 p.m. local time, and it was later than that, I believe. It was maybe 10:20 or so. You know, the fact that that was going on when the Central time game was going on beforehand, that just doesn't make any sense. And I get that there's television aspects to it, but that's something that feels like it's got to be fixed. Tennessee then, you know, turning around and I'm not, you know, apologizing for Tennessee or anything, but then for the Vols to have to turn around and be that first media press conference. I know there was only about a 30-minute difference in between the two, but there's still just things that it felt like could be better throughout. So as great as the tournament is, as popular as it is, as you know, as much as the numbers probably go gangbusters in terms of television ratings, there's got to be just a better way to do some of these things and to iron out some of these details. But that's at least sort of what I noticed just from a close up, you know, up and personal view this year.
Yeah. And I mean, it, some of it,
and
is,
I know that's not like, I know it's not all for me to decide. And you know, that's not necessarily on court action, but there is an impact to some degree. And again, that's not necessarily breaking down Tennessee's loss to Purdue or win over Creighton or anything, but just kind of you know, from looking at the tournament from a very broad 30,000 foot view.
Yeah, no, I know what you're saying, and you're not trying to say that's why Tennessee lost or anything like that. You're saying it is a completely separate thing, and you're right. It is.
Yeah, I'm just airing my grievances of having to work at 4 o'clock in the morning, you know, and not getting done with a game until 2 a.m. Like I'm getting into an old man stage here. I needed to go to bed at some point.
And, you know, one of the national writers, I can't remember who it was, like, I kind of tried to get Rick to tee off on it on Saturday, the day between the game. And obviously, you know, Rick took the high road and just talked about the things they'll have to do to try to recover and all that good stuff. But yeah, that aspect of it, I don't think it's ever going to get changed, though, because that is the TV. And
that's television.
That directly impacts the money so much. And, you know, they're going to do what TV wants. So it's just kind of unfortunate for Tennessee in the sense that it didn't really bounce their way. Some of it this season, the way it unfolded.
I think that reporter's exact quote was something on the lines of exactly tee off on him for me or something like that. Like, I think it was exact the way he was setting him up. All right. Tennessee loses to Purdue. We've talked about that a little bit. Zach Edey, just a 40-point, 16 rebound performance. That's tough to get over. We talked about sort of the ebbs and the flows of this tournament for Tennessee. Ultimately, I think one of the other lasting takeaways just of this is that Tennessee advances to the Elite Eight for the second time in program history. I think that's obviously something big, something to talk about for those seniors, especially Tennessee's three main seniors between Vescovy, James, and Connect. Getting them to that point in their final year, I think that's big. But I think for a lot of people, that's sort of the lasting takeaway. It's just you came very close to a Final Four berth. It wasn't a choke. It wasn't a deflating loss to that game, but I also really like what you said about sort of the way that Mississippi State game led into the tournament, just from the SEC tournament perspective as well.
Yeah, and the vibe I've gotten from talking to some fans and just general looking at it on Twitter, I think usually when you lose an NCAA tournament game, there's some mix of madness and being mad and being sad. And, you know, I think obviously with the way Tennessee's lost some of these games in recent years, you know, you go back to losing to FAU in the Sweet 16 or, you know, losing to Purdue with a call that was very controversial to win against Tennessee late in the, you know, 2019. It's been a lot more skewed on the mad side when the game or the days that followed the game. I think this year the vibe I've gotten from people is just a lot of sadness. You know, I don't think many people I've talked to have been very mad about it. You know, certainly some people are upset about the officiating, but I think most people kind of understand that that's how Zach Edey's been called all year and to some degree expected it going into the game. And, you know, there's not mad because the fact that Tennessee didn't play bad against Purdue. They didn't play their best game. They didn't play as well as they did against Creighton, but they didn't play bad. And there were no coaching decisions by Rick Barnes or his staff that you could point to and say, man, what were they doing? Like, Tennessee just kind of lost to a better team. And I think that led to being less mad, and I think leading to more sadness is the fact that two guys that have been a huge part of the program, and Josiah Jordan James and Santiago Vescovy, for 5 years, you know, they're gone, and they've played their last game for Tennessee. And Dalton Connect, who is one of the best players in Tennessee basketball history, his lone season and how much fun he was to watch, it's gone. And I think there's a lot of sadness knowing that, for Tennessee fans, knowing they'll never watch those guys again, and that how much fun that was. That's kind of, you know, what my takeaway, my read, and maybe I'm completely off reading the fan base the last couple of days, but that's the vibe I've gotten. And yeah, it's that, and we'll talk more about this story and the details in it that I wrote yesterday, what's next for Tennessee basketball after run to Elite Eight. You know, in the first section, 303 games those three guys started for Tennessee. Obviously, James and Vescovy over the last 5 years don't connect just this season, but he started all however many games Tennessee ended up playing this year. What was it, 36? He started all 36 games. A lot of starts, a lot of good basketball those three have played for Tennessee. And certainly, I think with James, it's rewarding that he seemed to play his best basketball in the NCAA tournament. He played really well. He was so important in Tennessee's win over Texas. You know, I think there's arguments to be made. He was the MVP of the game over Texas and the MVP in the game over Creighton. And then Vescovy, you kind of have it a little bit on the opposite side. He certainly didn't have his best senior season. Those shooting struggles amplified late in the season. And then the last weekend of the year, he's sick. He can't play in the Sweet 16 with the flu. And he went out there and gutted it out and gave Tennessee however many minutes it was. Trying to see here, 13 Six. Minutes okay. in the Elite Eight. But yeah, you could tell watching him. You could tell when you were up close to him. He looked like he was feeling terrible. And largely symbolic of his last month of the season, you know, he had 1-3 wide open and it rolled all the way around the rim and popped out. So I think there's for those two guys that have been in the program for 5 years, a lot of, I think, you know, it's cool to see things end the way they did for Josiah with him playing so well down the stretch. And it kind of sucks to see them end the way they did for Santi, where he didn't play his best basketball the last month of the season. And then the very last weekend, you know, he gets super sick and circumstances out of his control make it where he can't play one game and he's not even close to 100% in the next game.
Yeah, I think, you know, you look at the different eras of Tennessee basketball, and I was talking to a friend about this yesterday, and you know, a lot of people point to, you know, what Grant Williams and Admiral Schofield were able to do and sort of the era that they moved on from when they left around 2019, how that sort of passed the torch to then that next class. And obviously Santiago Vescovy and Josiah Jordan James being the two key factors of that. Those two guys consistently throughout the year, maybe not consistently, but multiple times throughout the year, they pointed back to both Yurosh and Olivier Kamwa as guys they felt sort of, you know, rode that boat along with them. You know, but when you look at Josiah and Santiago, you know, there might not be a first round draft pick among them like there was with Grant and Admiral. And there might not be an SEC Player of the Year title between the two of them like there were with the other two. But I think what they did was just as important and, you know, legitimately does sort of close down another chapter of this Tennessee basketball playbook. And there's certainly going to be more players that step up in their time. It's going to be interesting to see which of the freshman class and which of the younger players starts to sort of, you know, emerges as who are going to be that next, you know, that next class, those next players to carry the torch, you know, because the Kai Ziegler, as crazy it is to think about it, he's now going into his fourth year with Tennessee basketball. So it's not like, you know, he's one of those young guys anymore. He's on the older side of things. So it's going to be interesting to see what they do. But I think, again, just sort of specifically speaking about those two players, it is incredible what they gave to Tennessee for a five-year stretch. And Tennessee has had a couple of really talented but very memorable longtime players throughout their stretch during the Rick Barnes era. But I think that those two guys are going to be remembered just as favorably as some of those other ones, even though there were struggles throughout their career. And I think that that's certainly something to point out, right?
Absolutely.
There was adversity to get over it, and they battled through it. And this fan base has battled through a lot of things. And so I feel like both sort of sides, you know, they find common ground and just sort of being that battle-tested group that, you know, hey, things weren't always perfect. It's certainly not a perfect ride being a Tennessee sports fan, and it's not like Josiah Jordan James or Santiago Vescovy had perfect rides as well, but they gutted through it. And they also did a lot within the community, right? There were a lot of times where they were at Tennessee baseball games or they were at Tennessee football games. Santiago Vescovy talked just kind of before the tournament about all the different athletic events that he went to, whether it be soccer, tennis, football, baseball, whatever it was. So I think that those two guys are certainly going to be remembered well for you know, the vast majority of the Tennessee fan base, even despite the struggles. But like you alluded to, that sort of made them into the memory that they are.
Yeah, certainly. And I think, and you kind of hit on this, like, I don't think it's going to feel the same with like the, not from like a, that sounds so sappy and like, oh, Tennessee basketball will seem to be the same, but the way you described it with like Grant and Admiral and with Santi and Josiah, this next group's not going to be like that, because Grant and Admiral came in and they came in two different years. Admiral's a year older and he came with Kyle Alexander, and Grant came in with Jordan Bone and Jordan Bowden, and they came into a program that was new. It was Rick Barnes' first year they struggled. They played a bunch on teams that weren't great when they, you know, were freshmen and sophomores. I guess by Grant and Bone sophomore years, they were better. And then all those guys left at the same time because Bone and I guess Ballin stayed one more year and Lamonte stayed one more year. But Bone and Grant, two guys left after junior years to go along with Admiral and Kyle leaving his senior years. And then so obviously you had those two guys back next year. But then Lamonte has the season-ending shoulder surgery in December. So it's kind of Bowden, and then Josiah and Santi were thrust into huge roles as freshmen. And, you know, even, you know, to a lesser degree, Olivier and Euros, they both played that year. And they went through struggles. That team wasn't very good. And they got a little bit better. They got a little bit better. They got a little bit better. It's not going to be like that going forward because what you just said, Tennessee has now stacked recruiting classes behind them, at least one recruiting class. You have a senior class next year of Zakai Ziegler, Jonas Adu, and Jermaine Meshack that we'll be talking not in the exact same way about, but like that's a good, really good recruiting class that they brought in that next year. And so while Tennessee's really high on this year's freshman class or the class that were just freshmen, I think those guys are going to have big roles and you know, play, you know, have careers where they build at Tennessee. They had very limited roles as freshmen. And I think, and even as sophomores, they're not going to be asked to carry that burden like a Josiah and Santi were early in their career or a Grant and Admiral were in their career. So I think you're going to not quite see it be the same way as to where you really watched players go from their freshman, sophomore year being the main guys on teams that weren't great or, you know, were average or pretty good, but, you know, lost in the first round of the NCAA tournament in 2020-21. Into guys that were leading dudes or some of the better players, starters on all SEC teams and had big or on SEC championship teams and earned some all SEC bids and stepped up and played good down the NCAA tournament. So I think that aspect will be a little bit different and something that I think is why you maybe people draw the parallels between Josiah and Santi and Grant and Admiral, even though Grant and Admiral were more esteemed players and they have more accolades by their name. You kind of watch that journey. It's pretty similar with both duos.
Yeah, and I think the Tennessee fan base really appreciates those who stick with and who gut it out and who do, you know, sort of, you know, bleed orange in front of the fan base. Guys that the fan base feels like are a part of them and do cheer when they cheer and things like that. So I think you hit the nail on the head in a lot of those ways. You know, basketball is a funny and a beautiful sport, right? But sometimes when it's not as beautiful as when it can be, it's when you have players or teams that are doing things that they're not necessarily supposed to. I think one of the nice things that you saw unfold this year with the addition of Dalton Knecht was that it took a little bit of a weight off of those two guys' shoulders. You know, for a long time when Tennessee was this defensive force in college basketball, they obviously didn't have the offense to back it up. And so while both Josiah and Santiago Vescovi were, you know, talented offensive players, and they still are, you know, in a lot of ways, they were forced to be these leading scorers for Tennessee. They were forced to, you know, take over these big-time shooting roles. And then you bring in a very natural scorer like Dalton Knecht. And I think what we saw this year was that it took a little bit of that pressure off their shoulders to score 12, 14 points per game, to do whatever it takes to do that, when that might not necessarily be their most efficient role on this Tennessee basketball team. You really felt like this year, and you know, I understand that Vescovi has had this last month or stretch where it's been a bad shooting slump. But I think you look at this year as a whole and you can see that those two guys were able to, you know, encapsulate more advantageous roles to what their style is and what they can do, whether it be, that be on the defensive end, whether it be in just a versatile role, whether that be in a little bit of a more minor scoring role. I think you've seen Josiah Jordan-James soar in that sort of situation this year. So, to me, the addition of Dalton Knecht really opened things up for those two guys, obviously opened things up for the team overall as a whole. But then you just get to what Dalton Knecht brought to Tennessee from a scoring standpoint, from a shooting standpoint, from a getting to the basket standpoint, just from an offensive standpoint overall. What you alluded to earlier, one of the all-time great seasons in Tennessee basketball history, one of the all-time great Tennessee basketball players in history. What he brought to Tennessee in his lone year will not soon be forgotten by anybody who was in the Tennessee fan base or was watching Tennessee games this year, but certainly even in the college basketball world. He turned the SEC upside down on its head this year. He turned Tennessee upside down on its head this year. He came and he revolutionized Division I college basketball.
Yeah, and, you know, kind of to your first point, like, and I wrote about it, I think Dalton and the way he scored was huge for Josiah. You know, I think for Santi, you could go the other way or it it never quite clicked for him on the offensive end, you know, meshing in. Obviously, I think he was still just a super, super important part of the team and was so good defensively and did a lot of good things. But yeah, I mean, Dalton was, he was amazing. I mean, he was amazing. He was it was unbelievable to watch. And he truly, he came out of nowhere. Like, people were high on him, you know, in the offseason. It was like, you knew they liked him a lot, and you watched him practice, and it was like, yeah, this guy's good. But there was even like a little timidness of, you know, Tyreek Key looked good, and you felt like Dalton Kennett could do more than Tyreek Key, but still, it was a little bit different. And even, you know, I think some of the recruiting rankings or transfer rankings had Dalton pretty high, but a lot of them didn't. You know, guy, second team All Big Sky last year at Northern Colorado, and for him to be as good as he was pretty unbelievable. And he was, I mean, he was a player that we haven't seen in the SEC in a long time, and we won't see again. I mean, if it weren't for a guy that is 7'4" and the reigning national player of the year and just a physical anomaly in Zach Edey, he would be the national player of the year, I think, no doubt. And I think he'll finish second. I think Zach Edey will win. But it's 1 and 2, and I think it's a big gap to 3. And what Dalton Kennett did when it was all new to him, too, like, not just the basketball aspect of going from playing in the Big Sky to the SEC, and he got better. He was better. The numbers were better. But all the media attention that came with being one of the best players in big time college basketball and everything outside of it, from being a dude from Thornton, Colorado, playing at Northern Colorado in the Big Sky on a team that wasn't very good, I think won 9 games, to going from a team that won, being one of the best players in college basketball on a team that won the SEC outright, made it to the Elite Eight. And for that weight never to seemingly drag him down, it was pretty crazy.
Yeah, I think you said the right things there. And not to necessarily wear any sort of Tennessee hat or anything, although I guess I am wearing a hat with a T on it. It's just for the Texas Rangers. You look at Zach Edey versus Dalton Kennett, and you know, not just from what they could do on the court, but what they could do off the court, and not to make a mountain out of a molehill or anything, but you go back to that post game after the game. And again, maybe I'm making too much out of it, but in the loss, you know, Dalton Kennett is extremely humble. You know, he's praising his teammates. He's praising his coaching staff. He's not wanting to take any attention. And Zach Edey is, you know, with some embarrassing behavior on national television, right? With some controversial topics in the postgame press conference. And again, I'm not saying that Zach Edey is not a humble player. I'm sure there's times where he's shown plenty of humility throughout the season so far, but that, to me, especially being inside that building, watching all of that unfold, it more so emphasizes just how great of a student athlete that Dalton Kennett was here during this lone year with Tennessee. Again, he never wanted the spotlight, but he always shined in the spotlight. There were several games. I mean, going to North Carolina in just the first month of the season and being able to put up 37 points, which was, I believe, one away, right, from a visiting player's all-time scoring record. And he got hurt there in the he tied it. So he got hurt there in the final couple minutes. He surely would have made a free throw or a basket or something to get that record, right? So just seeing how that started this season and then where it would go from there, I believe it was something like 19, 20 point, 20 plus point performances around the season. I think it was something like 6 to 8 from 30. Obviously, he finally hit the 40 point performance in the season finale against Kentucky. But man, I think if you watched Dalton Kennett this year, you watched an NBA player, right? You watched a guy that not just has the talent to make it in the NBA, you have a guy who could step foot on an NBA roster tomorrow. And I'm not saying that he would start or he would go out there and average, you know, 20 points per game, but a guy that has the mold to be successful at that next level because of what he can do. And I think that him coming to Tennessee for this year, being able to improve his defense in the capacity that he did, he didn't go into an SEC Defensive Player of the Year category or anything, but just the improvements that he had throughout the year, I do think that that's going to make him a solid piece at the next level. I think he's probably going to be a top 12 draft pick, maybe even sneaks in the top 10 because of that performance against Purdue, just in the Elite Eight with the brights as light as they were. But again, you watch an NBA player and somebody who's going to have success at the next level. Rick Barnes said, you know, somebody asked Rick Barnes, hey, if you could tell any sort of NBA scout something about Dalton Kennett, what would you tell him? Rick Barnes said, he's just getting started right now. He also said he calls him a flamethrower, and I think that's a pretty good way to describe Dalton Kennett's lone year at Tennessee.
Yeah, certainly. And to your point, 30, you know, he averaged 21.2 points this season. He was better than that. He played injured throughout December and, you know, didn't put up very big numbers. But 35 plus points six times, 25 plus points 13 times. Jordan Moore over at Fox Sports Knoxville had the stat yesterday. Ever since the second SEC game, which was the Mississippi State game, Tennessee lost in Starkville, Dalton had scored 2 points in the first. He didn't play great in the SEC opener against Ole Miss. Not that he played bad, and Tennessee won by 30, but he scored 2 points in the first half against Mississippi State, and I think 26 in the second since that moment on. So really, when the game really started to matter in SEC play on, he averaged 25.6 points, 5.4 rebounds, 46% shooting from the field, 41% from three-point line, 76% from the free throw line. So he was just unbelievable. And, you know, I wrote about it on Sunday, and you hit on a lot of it there, so I won't go too deep in it. But, you know, most of the time, Dalton was his best when the lights were brightest. And it feels like to do that and also to be a really humble person and to not make it about himself is like a really weird dichotomy. It almost feels like you have to have such an arrogance that you so confident in yourself that you got to be that you'd be arrogant to be able to be like that. And Dalton wasn't that way. And I think that's maybe the thing that will stick with me the most moving forward is that dichotomy and how strange that was. And you know, kind of putting it, obviously I don't know how old you are. You're a couple years older than me. I'm 25. We've watched a lot of Tennessee basketball, but we haven't seen the full picture. And I thought it was interesting. My dad texted me last night after reading the Dalton story. And he said that, you know, he's been following basketball for 50 years. Bernard King, Ernie, Dell Ellis were all special. DK was just as good. And he said, I think Bernard King would be his Tennessee basketball goat and DK would be number two. So, and then what he said at the end was that Dalton played his best when the lights were the brightest in the biggest games. And that's a trait of the best players, the most special players. And certainly Dalton, when it mattered most, was fantastic. I think in the NCAA tournament, he averaged something like 27 points a game. He was great. And, you know, everything that we said about why we thought Dalton Kennett could be the guy that could get Tennessee to Final Four, even though it didn't happen, I think he lived up to just about all of that.
Tennessee found ranked wins this season against number 20 Illinois, number 22 Ole Miss, number 10 Kentucky, number 11 Auburn, number 14 Alabama, and number 17 South Carolina. That is also not even including the tournament wins against Texas and Creighton, who Creighton obviously is a ranked team. I believe Texas was sort of just on the outside for most of the season, but you're right, man. Those wins don't come without Dalton Kennett. Tennessee is a good team that's capable of getting ranked wins, and some of those would have come, and Tennessee's gotten good ranked wins in the past, but you know, you don't put together a resume like that without a player like Dalton Kennett. You don't go on a run like Tennessee did at the end of the season where they did. They beat Auburn, number 11 Auburn at home. Then they go on the road to beat number 14 Alabama. Then they go on the road to clinch the SEC regular season championship against number 17 South Carolina. You don't go on a run like that if you don't have Dalton Kennett. But looking at the schedule while I have it up, a couple other things stand out to me. Yes, Tennessee did drop that trio of games early in the season, November, to Purdue and Kansas in the Maui Invitational. Then it was always going to be tough to then come back to Knoxville, immediately have to go to Chapel Hill, North Carolina, to take on a really good UNC team who obviously made it as one of the four one seeds in the tournament. But aside from that, every time Tennessee lost this year, besides that Kentucky game in the regular season finale, they really found a way to bounce back big. Now, in the Mississippi State loss, they bounced back with a big second half victory against Georgia. Things got a little hairy there, you know, at times, but Tennessee still does pull out a 6-point win. But then you look at the loss to South Carolina at home. Tennessee comes back. They absolutely obliterate Kentucky on the road at Rupp. Then Tennessee loses on the road to Texas A&M. They stay on the road in Fayetteville, Arkansas. They take down the Razorbacks by nearly 30 points. I believe they handed Arkansas maybe the biggest loss or the second biggest loss, something along those lines in Bud Walton Arena history. And then you look at that loss to Mississippi State in the first game that they had in the SEC tournament. Tennessee turns around, takes care of business with a massive victory over St. Peter. So just this team's resiliency to stick together throughout the season, to take a loss and to figure out how to build on it and turn it into something more. I was really impressed by, again, just Tennessee's ability to be resilient throughout the season. It was a long season. They faced a lot of good competition. Even though the SEC did not really necessarily perform well in the NCAA tournament, they do have a team in the Final Four, but they didn't perform well overall as a whole. It was a stout SEC regular season. There's no question about that. Tennessee went through a lot of good teams. And whether it was Dalton Kennett, it was Josiah Jordan-James, it was Santiago Vescovi, it was Akai Ziegler. That's the guy that we haven't even talked about 40 minutes into this recording, who came back and had an SEC Defensive Player of the Year type season coming back from ACL surgery, right? That is insane.
I'd
be in a wheelchair for 2 years if I had that surgery, right? And he was able to come back and be the fastest player in all of college basketball. So I'm starting to definitely ramble. But a lot of things came together for a really impressive season for Tennessee, especially when you look at it from an actually schedule perspective and what they were able to do, either bouncing back from losses, taking care of ranked opponents, whatever it might be. It was impressive overall.
Yeah, maybe one final thought on that, and we can kind of get into the what's next aspect of it. But, you know, we talked about it in the Elite Eight, all the teams that Tennessee had played that were still alive. Well, in the Final Four, Tennessee's played three of the four teams remaining, and they're 3-2 in those games. They lost two against Purdue, they beat North Carolina State, and they went 2-0 against Alabama. So every team they lost to made it to the NCAA tournament. They had tons of good wins, tons of wins on the road this year, which is always good wins on the road too, not just wins, which is always hard to do in college basketball. So an impressive season and certainly a fun season. I mean, I know it was an exhibition game, but to me, it felt like the season started at Michigan State 2 days before Halloween, the day after the Kentucky football game, and it ended on Easter Sunday in Detroit, about 70 miles east.
Yep, that's true. All right, so you just teed it up. I will give it back to you here. You wrote the article yesterday. I would highly encourage everybody to go ahead and seek out this article. No matter what you hear over the next 5-10 minutes or so, you're going to want to read this for yourself as well, titled What's Next for Tennessee Basketball After Run to the Elite Eight. All right, if that's the question you're posing, I'll turn it right back to you to answer it. Sort of what is next for Tennessee basketball after the run to the Elite Eight?
Well, I was really looking a lot at the roster stuff, and there's, I guess, five parts of the story. Who's coming in, or who's gone, who could transfer, who's coming in, what are the spots in need in the portal, and who are the returning players that could step into a bigger role? So it's looking at those. Obviously, we've talked a lot about the guys that Tennessee will lose, and Josiah Jordan James, Santiago Vesky, Dalton Connect. Those guys accounted for 51% of Tennessee's points last year, 43% of its rebounds, 41% of its assists. They also combined to hit, I believe, it was 179 three-pointers last year. So a lot of shooting that Tennessee is losing. You know, Tennessee loses those three guys. They have one guy, Bishop Boswell, from the recruiting class coming in. It'll be a true freshman. So it'll have at least two spots to work with in the transfer portal. And then if anybody else leaves, you know, whoever leaves, that'll open up another extra spot. When you talk about the needs for Tennessee in the portal, to me, the two biggest I see, they need just wing scoring. They need guard scoring. You're not going to find another Dalton Connect, but you need somebody to come in that can score from the perimeter and play off the ball and play off of Zakai Ziegler and be able to score. I think that, to me, that's emphasis number one. I think number two, and to me, maybe the most fascinating question for Tennessee is you go from this season to next season. This year, we saw them play so much four guard lineup. I mean, that's mostly what they played. Now they got to playing two bigs more at the end of the season. What is that going to look like next year? Because just where Josiah Jordan James was so invaluable with what he could do for Tennessee, and Jemai Mashak can do some of that too. Like, I think you'll see him play some four next year, but they did it some this year too. And you heard it after the Alabama game, Rick Barnes said, "What was I thinking doing that? Cause when I do that, you're forcing him to guard a four man and he can do it. He's good enough, but that also takes away his best strength. This is the way he can take opposing guards out of game." So how much is it going to be with, you know, presumably Jonas Adu, Tobe Awaka, JP Estrella all back? How much better can Awaka and Estrella get? Or maybe even Cade Phillips, who's a freshman this year. How much more two bigs do they play? And then kind of on the transfer portal question, I think Tennessee needs to go out and find, whether it's a 6'8", 6'9", big man who can hit 30 threes on a season while shooting at a 32% clip, or whether they need to try to find another maybe more true small forward like Josiah, who's 6'6", 6'7", but versatile enough to play some small ball for. I think Tennessee needs to add a guy like that because of the versatility it would give them and how important that would be. So those are the two things I'd point to as the two biggest needs for the two spots we know are open right now, is a wing, an off-ball scorer, and somebody with some versatility that can stretch the floor and also play that four spot.
Yeah, I think you nailed it there. You know, and one of the names that you brought up that really sort of a light bulb lit up in my head when you said it, especially coming off of that performance in the Elite Eight against Purdue, is JP Estrella. I think he's sort of one of the biggest players to watch over the offseason, just sort of see his development. I thought he did take a step forward in that final game in a really tough matchup against Zach Edey. Obviously, there's not a ton you can do. You're hacking. You're getting called for fouls. But I liked what I saw from him, and I do think that he's a piece that you've been able to see Tennessee throughout the season. Say, all right, this is going to be one of our guys for the future. We want to get him some reps. We want to get him some run. So I think that looking at his offseason is going to be one of the most key players on this Tennessee basketball team. But you're right. What does next season look like just with Jonas Adu and Tobey Awaka coming back? How does all that get handled in the roster? And then again, I thought the other thing that you nailed was just it's tough to lose Josiah Jordan-James because of everything he brings to the table just as a basketball player. But, man, his versatility was so crucial and just so valuable for Tennessee. And in that way, he was almost sort of like one of those cheat code players for Tennessee, right? That players who you could put on the court and he could guard 1 through 5. He could do what you needed to. And he not only could do what he needed to, he knew what he needed to do. And I think that's a really important aspect, not just having the athleticism to do it, but having the knowledge to being able to run what Tennessee wants to do on the defensive end with the complications that can occur at different times during the different sets that they run. So certainly a lot of interesting pieces for Tennessee to have to rebuild on, refill, re-add to the team. But I think you really nailed it with sort of where Tennessee can look for some of those pieces and what some of the most important pieces are going to be.
Yeah, certainly. And I think Tennessee will miss Josiah and Santi a lot on the defensive end and how attuned they were to the scouting report and all the little details that came in Tennessee being good defensively and how much of a fix-it guy that Josiah was. And then kind of looking a little more at the transfer portal, all right, what's the needs past those two? You know, the likelihood is that at least somebody will transfer for Tennessee. And I think, you know, that's where it becomes interesting. I think there's even a little bit of flexibility to go with best player available at that point. I do think Tennessee needs more shooting. I think when you talk about losing those three guys, they need more shooting. And look, and we'll talk about this in a second. I'm sure we'll talk about guys who could step up into bigger roles. Maybe Cam Carr can really fill that role. But I kind of look at that. You know, they haven't had a backup point guard for Zakai in the last 2 years, and it's hurt him some, but it hasn't hurt him a ton. Like, that's a spot they could look at, but it's kind of also like, who are you going to get in the portal who's going to come play point guard with Zakai that's very good? Because Zakai's going to play, even if Zakai is a backup, he's going to play 32 minutes a night. And
yeah,
goodness knows when it gets to the tournament, he's going to play 35 minutes a night. So it's almost,
and he's handling that ball.
Yeah. You almost look for someone who's maybe a little more well-attuned to be able to play point guard, but also play off the ball. You know, maybe more than a Jordan Gainey was for Tennessee this past year. And certainly I think you could look at interior depth. That wouldn't be a bad idea. And I had someone, you know, comment on the article kind of ripping me for saying that what Tennessee needs is a really big guy because they lost all their games against seven-footers. And, you know, you're right, they did. If you find somebody that's 7 foot and really, really good in the portal, by all means, go hard after him. I just think Tennessee's best chance is there because of how rare those guys are, is just to develop what they have, to develop Jonas and develop JP and develop Tobey. Because those guys that, even though there were, you know, this year was the year of the big in college basketball, and there were a lot of really good, you know, 7-footers. A lot of those guys are gone. Zach Edey's gone. Klingon's gone. Jani Broom in the SEC is gone. Tolu Smith in the SEC is gone. I guess Hunter Dickinson might come back for one more year. Kalkbrenner at Creighton is gone. So certainly you could add some post depth, but I still kind of think if Tennessee brings back all three guys, I think you maybe put more of your eggs in the development basket of continuing to make those guys better. But obviously, you know, all curious spots. And I think, like I said at the start of this little part, I think Tennessee will be able to have some flexibility to go best available of who they like and who they think fits them best. And obviously it'll depend on, you know, if this spot or multiple spots more become open, it'll depend on who's leaving and what kind of voids that leaves on the roster too.
Yeah, and I also think that the success of Dalton Connect sort of, you know, is enticing for players in the portal, right? Being able for Tennessee to be able to go recruit guys and say, hey, you know, it might only be 1 year, but look how we believe that we can, you know, maybe impact a career or how you can impact us as a team, how you can bring us something to the table, and then we're going to keep you in the spotlight because Tennessee is a you know, a national program that is up there in the top tier with the top teams in college basketball. So I think that Dalton Connect, you know, for as much success as Dalton Connect brought Tennessee this year from an on-court perspective, I think he gives them a little bit of credibility to just use in the recruiting room. Not that other programs and other teams won't have that as well, but certainly Tennessee is somebody that they can point to and say, hey, look what we can do with an impact transfer portal player, which was also one of the bigger storylines out of that Sweet 16 game with Baylor Shireman at Creighton. So maybe Tennessee's got a little wiggle room there. Maybe that's just me kind of thinking off the top of my head, but transfer portal is definitely going to be big for Tennessee and every other program, just like it has been and has continued to will be, or has and will continue to be
there you go.
As we keep going forward. It took me a second. It's been a long weekend.
No, you're right. Dalton Connect's certainly a good selling point for Tennessee in the portal, what he did this year and the way Tennessee blended, I think, really well running stuff and doing stuff to emphasize Dalton's strengths while also getting him better at his weaknesses and improving him on those areas. I think that's it should be a really good selling point for Tennessee. And again, the last part of this article I want to talk about is just like the guys that could step up. And, you know, I think the two that I would look to the most is two freshmen this past year, JP Estrella and Cam Carr. I know the coaches are high on both those guys, and both of them showed flashes at times. I think both of those guys are going to no doubt be at least role players for Tennessee next year. I don't know how big that role will be. I don't know if they're going to be starters or anything like that. But those are guys I'd point to. Tobe Awaka, the third year, has oftentimes been the year that big men kind of take a step forward, you know, sometimes in Barnes' system. So can Awaka, who, you know, played well down the stretch of the NCAA tournament, can he, who had a very up and down year, can he find another groove and can he play better without fouling to stay out of foul trouble, I think will be a big question. And then, you know, maybe a longer shot, but what about Jordan Ganey? I mean, he improved drastically defensively over the course of the year, and he played two of his best games all season in the Sweet 16 and in the Elite Eight. So can he find another in his second year playing in the SEC, can he find some more comfortability, some more confidence? Not that I think he's going to become a go-to guy or he's going to be that scorer that Tennessee really needs from the perimeter, but can he be a guy that's more consistent and shoots the ball at a higher clip next season?
Yeah, no doubt about it. That's great stuff right there. And again, I would highly encourage everybody to go head over to RockyTopInsider.com and go find that article. Again, you can search it on Google, you can search it on RTI, but it is titled "What's Next for Tennessee Basketball After a Run to the Elite Eight?" All right, so we have pretty much talked about the NCAA tournament as a whole, the season as a whole. Ryan, any other kind of final wrap-up thoughts that you have for this Tennessee basketball team in the iteration that was the 2023-2024 Tennessee Volunteers?
You know, we talked obviously a lot, rightfully so, about the seniors and kind of glossed over the juniors, but that'll be key. I mean, I just talked about next year, and we didn't mention it either, the juniors, but those are going to be the guys that are now called upon to lead and be the pushing forces. Tennessee needs, if Jonas Adu, they need Jonas Adu to be more than he was the final month of the season and more consistent and to get stronger this offseason and be better versed to handle some of those big physical guys down low. They need, you know, this guy to keep being the guy that he is, see how much better he can get. You know, obviously, the fact that he got as better as he did this season coming off the ACL is pretty impressive. And then Jemai Meshack, who's, you know, was, I've said it many a times, every game I left, I felt like Jemai Meshack should have played 10 more minutes. What does his role look like next year? Can he find a little more confidence in that jumper? That jumper that was definitively better this year, but he was still a little bit tentative at times to shoot it. Can he find some consistency? Can he find some confidence? And can he become a, if not a reliable offensive force, can he become a guy that defenses have to worry about a little bit more? Because if he can pair that with everything else he does on the court, on the defensive end, on the rebounding end, you got yourself a star player.
Season officially comes to an end with a loss to Purdue in the Elite Eight for Tennessee basketball, but it was a memorable season nonetheless. Again, several different things happened throughout the season. Josiah Jordan-James surpasses 1,000 career points. Rick Barnes surpasses 800 career wins as a head coach. Tennessee wins the outright SEC regular season championship with a game to spare in the season. Tennessee gets a dominant road win over Kentucky. Obviously, what Dalton Connect was able to do was the SEC Player of the Year. Zakai Ziegler was the SEC Defensive Player of the Year just in the year following an ACL surgery. There were a lot of memorable moments for this Tennessee basketball team throughout the year, and that is certainly how I will remember them. It was a very fun team to cover. It was a team that showed a lot of humility throughout the season, a team that didn't get too full of themselves, that didn't turn on each other, that you could really sort of tell just from watching practices, from listening to press conference, from listening to interviews, a team that strengthened as the season went on. And man, in a season where it maybe there was ways for it to not go that way, right? When you bring in a player like Dalton Connect who can score, you know, 25 points per game in SEC play, you know, maybe that ruffles some feathers the wrong way for players who have been here for 4 years, 5 years. But I think it does speak to the maturity and just sort of the cohesiveness of this Tennessee basketball team to come in and say, hey, no, you know what? For guys who have been there for a couple of years, we'll take a step back, and we're okay with doing that because we want to see this team win. We want to see this program win. We want to win for this coaching staff, and we want to win for this fans. It's a situation that maybe could have gone wrong in other different places or with other different people or coaches. But for everything to sort of stay as good as it did for Tennessee, for it to become more strengthened throughout the season, I think it's just a testament to the young men in that room. So it was a memorable team to cover. I appreciate the opportunity. But there's still a lot more on the horizon, not just for Tennessee basketball, but for Tennessee athletics as a whole, as we sort of get close to winding down this 2023-2024 academic calendar.
Yeah, no, to your point, it's not a given that I said it all the time about basketball. You can add good pieces from the portal, pieces that look really good, guys that were really good at their past school, and basketball is such a team game, and way everything interweaves together. It's not like football and baseball in that way. It obviously your team games too, but so much of it is if you're talented, you're going to have success wherever you go. Basketball, it all ties together, and that's, you know, what makes it such a beautiful sport to me. And it's no given, even when you add talented guys. So it obviously, you saw a lot of selflessness from other guys, and you saw Tennessee grow, I think, over the course of the season on what they did offensively as everybody kind of figured out each other's games and the way they best worked and best fit together.
Basketball season might be over, but Rocky Top Insider is still your one-stop destination for all Tennessee basketball news, notes, and coverage as the offseason just starts rolling. There's going to be a lot of transfer portal conversations over the next month or two. We will have you updated on all of that. We will keep you updated on some of the happenings around Tennessee basketball. Ryan does a great job of talking to some of the recruits or talking to some of the prospects that may be future volunteers. He's actually already talked to Bishop Boswell. You can go and find that interview somewhere on the Rocky Top Insider site. You can also find it attached to that What's Next for Tennessee Basketball article that we had just mentioned a couple minutes ago. So no matter if it's the off season or during season, we will have you covered over on RockyTopInsider.com. If you want to follow Ryan Shumpert, you can do that at rshump00 on Twitter. If you want to follow myself, you can do that at Rick_Butler on social media. Ryan, any other kind of final wrap-up thoughts as we get out of here for this RTI Press Pass podcast?
Nope. I've given all the thoughts I have.
All right. Well, that's going to wrap it up for us. Stay tuned as more baseball coverage is on the way. That season is still going strong. Tennessee with a series against Auburn on the road this weekend. Is that correct?
Auburn on the road, come back for LSU at home, and then Kentucky on the road. So three big ones the next three weekends.
That is exciting. That LSU series is also going to be the same weekend as the 2024 Orange and White Tennessee football spring game, which RTI will have you covered from Neyland Stadium for that one as well. So I'm starting to ramble. More to the story is that there's a lot of big things coming this way, and we will have you covered for it all. For Ryan Shumpert, I'm Rick Butler. Thanks for listening to the RTI Press Pass podcast. We'll be right back.